Hello and welcome to Boomeranging, from expat to repat, a podcast that explores the question, what could be so hard about returning home after years living overseas? I'm your host, Margot Anderson, and in each episode, I will sit down with a former Aussie expat to discuss how they survived repatriation and reverse culture shock, how they navigated the logistics of careers, friends, and family to successfully find their new place at home, and all without losing their global spirit. If you have just returned home, are thinking about it, or just love a good yarn told by professional globetrotters, then I have no doubt you'll enjoy meeting this diverse group of Australians. Brett Cooper said he knew it was going to be tough coming home after 13 years overseas. Despite this, and despite spending 6 months preparing, he said the experience was even tougher than he imagined. But Brett wasn't planning your standard expat to repat move back home. He was leaving the only employer he had ever known, moving to a city where he had no family present, with two kids who were born overseas, and all as he was entering into a new family dynamic. I am talking to Brett 18 months after he blew his life up and returned to Australia. We talk about how, after a 21-year career with one employer that took him to Europe and Asia, he decided to go out on his own for the first time and create a successful consulting and portfolio career supporting his new life in Melbourne. So welcome, Brett.
Hi, Margot. Nice to join you and chat with you today.
Yeah, lovely to have you here. Where are we chatting with you?
I'm in Melbourne. It's an unbelievably beautiful day. I can't believe late April, 24 degrees in Melbourne, not a cloud in the sky. I'm hoping it stays like this for as long as it can, but I'm in Glen Iris in Melbourne.
Before we delve into your story of life overseas, can you take us back to what life looked like here and what you were actually doing before you boarded the plane for the first overseas role?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So I was born in Wollongong in New South Wales, then moved to Sydney for work. I started working with Philip Morris International straight out of university, and that actually brought me to Melbourne because the head office was actually in Melbourne. But I started in Sydney, then moved to Melbourne. I was doing a range of different roles with them, primarily sales and marketing and general management. Really enjoyed it. Life was good, learning so much and wanting to see the world.
You had a real ambition to travel with work and craft that as part of your career plan. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to travel and learn as much as I could. Funnily enough, when I was growing up, I actually didn't go on a plane until I was around 18 years old, which is unheard of, really. You know, you travel, yeah. But we'd go on holidays, but driving and that sort of stuff. But I always wanted to see the world. And when I started with Philip Morris, they're really an international company. And I saw a lot of other people going and, you know, people I knew talked about how good it was. And I just wanted to experience that myself.
Yeah, wonderful. And that's the beauty, isn't it, of being with a global organization. Those pathways are available to us. Your first international role with them saw you relocate to Switzerland to take on a corporate affairs role. And I know in our discussions, you know, earlier you said it was really a cocktail of culture shock and job shock when you first arrived. Can you talk us through what you meant by that?
So my aspiration was to be a general manager or managing director of a country. That's what I wanted to do. The company is pretty good with this sort of stuff. They say if you want to do that, then you've got to develop your skill set. You need international experience. You can't just have Australian experience only. And you also need to have experience in corporate affairs or public relations work. I'm a sales and marketing guy originally. And so I said, well, look, I'll go, you know, roll the dice, send me wherever you like. And so they said, look, the global headquarters is in Switzerland. Off you go. Come across here and work in corporate affairs for the European Union. And so I moved across. I got off the plane and I regretted some things. I should have learnt more French before I left, but you don't always have time to do that. But it was amazing. Everything was very different for me, you know, not being able to communicate particularly well. I didn't know anyone.
Yeah,
I just
okay.
knew that I had to be at the office meeting the person that looks after me from HR at 9 o'clock in the morning on the Monday when I arrived. And I arrived on the Saturday, I think it was. So there were so many strange things, you know, even funny little things like going to the grocery store. Like in Melbourne at the time, they weigh all the groceries at, you know, all the stuff like vegetables and stuff at the checkout. But there I went to the checkout with my bags and they're like, come on, you've got to weigh this first. You've got to put a sticker on and you've got to do this.
Yeah.
They said it in French and I had no idea what the hell they were talking about. So anyway, it was very interesting, you know, new work, new location and all this different stuff going on and having no contacts there at all. It was just a shock on all fronts. And one embarrassing thing is it was a little bit like that Home Alone episode where you see the kid walking along the street, then suddenly his grocery bag breaks and the oranges go rolling. Yeah. Same for me. I was exactly the same. I felt like I was Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, totally by myself and my oranges rolling down the street.
Well, it's certainly nothing like sink or swim, right, to learn, you know. So, I mean, you were very fortunate, I guess, in the opportunities that unfolded. So you went from Europe to the UK to Philippines to Hong Kong to Macau. Can you talk us through how that unfolded and I guess what the motivations were to seek out, you know, those opportunities as they were presented?
Yeah, absolutely. So my approach is always just to learn as much as I possibly can. And when I got to the head office over there, I went from being, you know, a big fish in a small pond in Australia to suddenly being a very small fish out in the ocean in Switzerland. I had to learn a lot about, you know, different countries, about getting used to a new approach for work and all that sort of stuff. But I really enjoyed it. The first 6 months were terribly uncomfortable, I must admit. But I really did like that. I wanted to experience more of it. And the advantage that I got is because I was part of the global headquarters, I could see the different countries out there and then, you know, spend more time with them and target, I guess, not necessarily exactly where I wanted to be, but the list of places where I potentially could move to work. I was lucky in the UK in a way because for that company anyway, the UK was one country that no one wanted to work in that job. And the reason for it is they loved the UK, they loved London, all that sort of stuff, with the exception probably of the weather. But it was really aggressive from a media perspective, you know, political dynamics. It wasn't something that too many people were used to or were happy to go and do. So, and I didn't mind that. I said, look, throw me in. I'll sink or swim. So I just went with the flow and any opportunity that came up, I accepted it. So I was really lucky that the company moved me in that way. In terms of coming back to Asia, I had my first child on the way and I was offered a job actually in Lithuania looking after the Baltic states. It was a managing director job, big job, but I calculated the flight and the distance to get back home and have any sort of family support. And you'd usually have to fly to London anyway to get home. And I just thought it was just too far away geographically. And I guess raising a newborn in that part of the world, you need family around. So I said to them, look, I can't take that one, but can I move closer to Asia? And I was lucky enough, they said, yep, the Philippines. Totally different sort of place, but I was happy to move there and take on a new challenge and so forth, and then ended up with the same thing in Hong Kong and Macau later on down the track.
And so when did you actually start to prepare to come home? And what were the learnings from, I guess, what you did before you left overseas?
I was doing pretty well in the company. I really liked the company, but back in 2020, I was going through a lot of change. And I started to get a bit of a feeling, how long-term will this be? I'd already been in the company 20 years at the time. And I started to think, well, look, my kids are getting older. They had very wicked American accents from the international school.
So you had two kids by this stage?
Yeah. So my first child was born in the Philippines and my second was in Hong Kong. And it was just getting to the point with the company where I thought, look, I'm not quite sure how long it will be, but I did want to stay at the time. But then in terms of the work side of things, they said, look, and I had a good chat with my boss, who was a little bit of a mentor, and he said, look, how long do you really want to stay with the company? You've been 20 years now, and I ended up being 21 by the time I left. But he said, do you really want to wake up in 10 years from now and think I should have left then? And restarted, like, is a career in one company what you want to do? And it made me think, look, I probably should have made that decision and moved on earlier, given my experience now and learning in Australia, because 21 years in one company is now pretty much unheard of. But I took the decision then and thought, look, yes, it's probably best to move out of the organization in the right way. So I made the decision mid-2020 with the company that I'd move on. They were lovely. They gave me until midway through the next year to finish off with what I was doing. They gave me different things that I needed to work on. But I guess to answer your question, I started thinking around early 2020, always had something in the back of my mind that at some stage I'll move back to Australia. I thought it came a little bit quicker than what it actually did. But in the end, yeah, that's how it all came about.
It's quite bold, really, to think, okay, I'm going to execute a change in job and career at the same time as executing a change in geographical locations of life and lifestyle. Because you did have the opportunity to come back, should you have chosen that path, didn't you, with Philip Morris?
Yeah. So essentially what happened was they didn't like to part ways suddenly. So what we did is I needed to, of course, hand over to the person taking over from me. And then I had a 6-month period where I was helping them on a range of different things for the Asian markets, especially around employee engagement, human resources, that sort of thing. The decision I took at the time, it wasn't on the table, but I could have put it on the table, was to stay in Hong Kong, you know, see things out. You know, I loved Hong Kong as a place. I wanted to stay there. I wasn't 100% sure yet either whether I would come back to Australia yet. I actually didn't make that decision until around March 2021, where I was having some, a change in my personal and family situation that, you know, pulled the trigger to say it must now be Australia. So I was still looking at different options. But to go back, I think what I would have done and would have been a smarter move for me, given the learnings I've had since then, is to take that last 6 months in the company back home here in Australia. Then I can land, I can assimilate, I can get back into Australia without having every single thing in my life being new. So I would have taken that approach if I had have known a little bit better at the time.
So you land back, you think, okay, I'm in Melbourne, I'm good to go. You start applying for lots and lots of roles. What are the key learnings and reflections, I guess, from that time, you know, where you were talking to a lot of people, you were having a lot of coffees, you were having a lot of beers.
Yeah.
And, you know, just trying to get under the bonnet of what was happening here in Australia.
So I decided in that last 6 month period that I would start doing some consulting work for myself. The reason for that is I wasn't quite sure coming back to Australia what sort of role I would land. And a lot of the recruiters that I was speaking to kept saying, look, wait until you get back and then we'll talk to you. And I found that difficult because I like to plan ahead and so forth. So what I did when I landed is I did meet with those recruiters. Again, this is the strange thing, wait till you get back. But I came back in lockdown when you can't meet anyone anyway. So it was kind of strange that they couldn't meet me before. But anyway, started applying for jobs. So looking through LinkedIn and all that sort of stuff. And one of my key learnings was I was taking an approach where I was not focused on exactly what I wanted to do or exactly the right recruiters to speak with. And I found I was speaking to too many people, but they were pretty shallow discussions in the end. And I really needed to focus myself a lot. And one of the things, and it probably a tip for people who either are planning to come back or are, you know, in the process of, is that understanding how the recruitment market works in Australia is really important. And what I found is that I used to be someone that recruiters wanted to speak to because it was a big company. They'd always contact me, they'd come to me, but when I'm on the other side, they didn't suddenly. And I got a lot of feedback that was just really, you know, not helpful at all. And so the recruiters would say things like, look, you're a really interesting candidate. This is all great, but, you know, you don't have all the boxes ticked for what people in Australia want. And finally, I got to the bottom of that. One recruiter who I respect for telling me, but disrespect for the approach that they take. And this is not for all recruiters. Some are good. But this one is a very big recruitment company in Australia. He said, look, let's just talk for a minute. You need to tick every box for me to put you forward to an organization. And I said, what box am I not ticking? And he said, one box that they want to tick is Australian Stock Exchange listed experience, recent listed experience. So therefore, you have to have at least worked for an Australian company in the last 5 years. And so I said, okay, so I can't deliver that clearly, but it's US listed there. You know, what's the big deal? And then he said the very honest thing, which I probably needed to hear, but the way he said it was pretty poor. He said, look, I've got probably around about between 15 and 30 candidates that I can put forward to a role. And I usually do a hit list of about 5 that are really the right ones. And he said, for you, because you don't tick that, it's going to take me an extra 15 to 20 minutes to explain to the organization of my client why you're better than the others. And I can see that you are. I can see the experience is up there. Like you would be in the top five, no problem. But the problem for me is that it takes me 15 to 20 minutes to explain that. And I only get paid for filling the role.
Oh, wow.
So therefore, I can tick the box and fill the role without having to take the time to explain to you, so sorry, I'm not going to do it. And I said, look, is that consistent? And he said, well, for me and our company, it is anyway. So what I found is with recruiters, my advice to people would be understand where the recruiters are coming from. Some of them are amazing. They are really good. So spend your time choosing which one to go with. Don't go with all of them. And don't go with just the biggest name or anything like that, because you'll probably find you're going to be a little bit disappointed.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many learnings in that. Firstly, I do, and like I said, wow. I mean, it's very, very confronting to hear that. But I think there's a couple of things that stand out for me. And one is that you sort of said, look, I had to really focus and get clear myself on what I want. And I do find that a lot of people leave discussions with recruiters and internal hiring managers really disappointed, and the recruiter or the hiring manager can't see where they fit. And so I think if we aren't sharp, we really confuse people as to what we want. But the second thing I think is really important, and that is, you know, you talk about like the number of conversations that you have and you just had too many people in the mix. And that is, you've got to narrow down that marketing plan. And I think that, you know, getting really clear on what we want is one thing. The next thing is getting really clear on who are the key people in the market that can help me.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's time, isn't it? It's so much time that you have to spend to navigate this area.
There was a few things that did help me along the way. Firstly is focusing, as you said, on people who do understand and who, you know, value who you are and what you can do. And they are out there. They may not be necessarily in the normal spots you would look. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to yourself, Margot, and the team back in 2020, actually.
You're in Hong Kong still. Yeah.
Yeah, you're still in Hong Kong. So it was great to be able to connect with you and the team, because you helped. And the important thing and the advice I would give is make sure that you, to anyone thinking about it, get in contact as early as possible.
Thanks, Brett.
To do that. But, well, funny enough, some things pop up from time to time and you think about it, you think, wow, that makes a big difference. And one thing popped up on my phone. I've got this app that just sends me quotes every now and then. I don't know why it does it, but anyway, there was one quote that popped up on my phone as I was going through all this, and it said, "Life is too short to waste your time on people who don't respect, appreciate, and value you." And when I looked at that, I thought, wow, it's a little bit harsh. It comes across, don't waste your time. But what I realized from that going through this process is that there is a lot of people who do. They do understand you. They do respect you. And that's who you need to spend time with. And give people a chance. But if they don't help and they don't really respect and they give you that sort of feedback, like what that recruiter did to me anyway, don't waste time on that. You know, you can have two great conversations in the time you spend one chasing up with these people who don't really respect you so or value you. So that would be my advice to people, yeah.
It's that good old ROI, isn't it? Or our return on effort. You know, we've got to really be careful where we invest our time and invest our efforts. So, yeah, good tips, great tips. So today you're building out a portfolio career. What made you decide to work for yourself and consider this path? I mean, 21 years inside one organization, it's a really different path, you know, as well.
Yeah, a few different reasons. The first one is my two children. That's the first and most important. When I looked at what I was doing, you know, when I first got back, I was trying to work out, because I don't have family here in Melbourne. I need to be here for my children. So that's the reason I'm in Melbourne. But the reality from a work and family and every other aspect of my life is I should be in Sydney, because it's better suited for my background and what I can do. So I looked at that and I thought, look, doing the normal work approach of, you know, 9 to 5 or whatever it could be, 8 till 6 or whatever time people work these days, is that it would be difficult for me to be there and be what I need to do for Jordan and Sienna, my children, and still do that. So I needed to take a little bit of time. But then second to that, I thought, look, is that really what I want to do? Do I really want to be jumping into any organization straight away? And for me, I'm quite a loyal and long-term person, and I want to join an organization that I'm going to be with for quite some time. I'm not a jumper to go in and do 3-4 years and then jump out. And then the third thing was that I'm not sure about industry, but I was told that, look, you've got to be a square box for a square hole in Australia for roles. So what do I focus on, given I've got sales and marketing, corporate affairs, communications, general, all this different stuff over time in HR? I don't really want to go in and just do one thing. And so I thought a portfolio approach can really help me do that, because I can help a client on sales and marketing. I can do corporate affairs, or I can do some human resources work for different clients. It doesn't need to be just for one client. So that's the way I've looked at it. And now my approach is I am doing that, sales and marketing with one, business development with another, corporate affairs with another. And I'm just about to start some human resources work, training a leadership team overseas. So it's just, it allows me to have the career and what I want to do every day without having to be a square box for a square hole, if that makes sense.
Yeah, fantastic. One of the challenges, obviously, is when you return, we need a network to help us either do a job or to find, you know, the clients that we might need if this is the path that we're going down. How have you managed to do that? How have you sourced clients? Where have you found, you know, real openness and receptiveness to your background? And who's supported that?
It's really come from all my connections. So the way I looked at it was, who do I know overseas that also knows people or can connect me with people in Australia? So that's one, because I spent so long over there. The second was looking at people in Australia who do this extremely well. And Margot, of course, you're one of those people who has introduced me to a lot of great people who, not just people who are returning, but people who have returned, who have been through the same experience and can give advice and connections on where to go. I met a lovely person called John Burgess, who his career and his company is all about connectedness. And he connected me with a lot of people and helped me understand that, you know, you need to follow up. You need to make sure they're genuine connections, not just networking. And probably the final person that's helped me along in terms of connections and advice has been someone you've had on a podcast before, Andy Whitford from CT Group. He's been great in advice and connecting you with different people, and I'm doing some work with his organization. But the sorts of people like yourself, John and Andy, have been fantastic for that. But it comes down to that, those connections, making sure that you talk to the people who understand and care. And then when they connect you, really make that connection strong. Don't go out fishing with a big net. You've got to go spear fishing, you know.
Are there any other challenges that you faced in starting a portfolio career after so long overseas? Or
first of all, it's definitely not easy. One of the things that a lot of people, of course, want is you want job security, you want income security, you want all those things that a big company brings. A portfolio career doesn't do that. You don't know what's going to come month to month. And you could have a client that may last 3 months, 6 months, 12 years. It could be like that. But generally, it's not. It's more shorter-term work that you need to do. So you've got to do a lot of work like that, and a lot of pro bono work, unfortunately, as well, to build those connections up. So it just takes time. And I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there for sure. And the second thing is you've got to be prepared for rejection a lot, unfortunately. And don't treat it as rejection, as always. Treat it as a learning. But just be prepared to do a lot of the work that you need to do to get the connections going, to maybe do little bits of work at the start to then build it on to something else. It's so important to do that. But definitely I wouldn't say it's an easy thing to do by any stretch. It takes time. It takes effort. You just got to be relentless and positive and resilient about it all.
Yeah, that resilience piece is just so incredibly important, isn't it? You know, I think when you're working for a brand and somebody says no, it can feel like, okay, well, they didn't want, you know, Philip Morris International. But if they say no to you when you're doing your portfolio career, it feels very personal.
It sure does.
Yeah, learning to navigate that piece. And I think time is just something that we hear constantly about, the length of time that it takes. So yeah, financial security, a couple of things there need to be in play. So definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned earlier that your children were a really big driver for pursuing this path. How do you feel, I guess, that it's also supported you in getting into life in Melbourne or re-establishing life in Australia? Because you don't have the after-work crew or the lunchtime crew to pop out with. So there's got to be other ways that you've built that out.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Australia, of course, is an amazing, amazing place. We all know that. Coming back, it definitely isn't easy because you miss a lot of things that you do have overseas. But at the same time, what you didn't have overseas is everything that Australia brings. Beautiful cities, beautiful environment, you know, sport like nothing else. So I've just gotten into all those things that are purely Australian, you know, seeing the environment as much as you can, going to the football as much as possible. And that helped me with the kids. Not saying it was automatic, but that American accent started to come down a little bit quicker when I took them to a few Collingwood games. So it kind of worked out a little bit in that front. They hear some things that they shouldn't hear for sure and sometimes repeat them. But, you know, getting back into life has been what's probably helped me along the most, and doing those things that you really miss back home, you know, going to the Boxing Day test to watch the cricket, you know, the AFL's on tomorrow for the Anzac Day match. All these things that you just don't get overseas, I've really gotten back into really heavily, and it's really helped me, and it's helped my kids realise, you know, Australia is an amazing place. Although they do miss it over there. I think if they had the choice today, where do you want to live, Melbourne or Hong Kong, they'd probably say Hong Kong still. But in time, it'll probably come back. And
yeah. How old are your kids now?
Jordan is 9. He was born in Manila, and Sienna is 6, almost 7.
And you allude to the fact that there's still a pull for them for Hong Kong. I mean, they'd never lived here before. So, you know, Australia being home is a different concept for them, isn't it? I mean,
sure
they've probably
is.
heard you talk about home as being Australia, but for them, they might hold the passport, but there's a lot of gaps between that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's going to take a lot more time, actually. Funnily enough, my son said to me, he said, look, our mum was born in Dubai and then moved to Australia when she was young, but she's from Dubai. He's from the Philippines, and my daughter's from Hong Kong. He said, we're all international people. You're the only Australian. Yeah. What are we doing? Anyway, it was quite funny hearing it from his perspective, but
yeah,
but he knows that he's, they know they're Australian, but it just is going to take a little bit of time, I think, you know, as they meet more friends and they talk through it all and share, you know, who they are and learn about others and that sort of stuff. It's going to make a difference for them. Interestingly enough, for school last term, they had to dress up in something that symbolizes their background and culture. And I said, so what do you want to do? What do you want to dress up as? And Sienna said, I want to dress up in red with white being the Hong Kong flag. So she dressed all in red, but then she had to explain, and she came home at the end of the day and said, look, it was hard to explain that I was born in Hong Kong and what it's all about and everything like that. But they're doing all those sorts of things. But I think holding on to that, you know, that international heritage, I think is a good thing for them and their history. But at the same time, learning as much as they can and knowing, you know, how good Australia is and that we're Australian is also something that will come over time as well.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because I often ask the question to people, like, how long did it take before you felt like you were, you know, really back to stay for some length of time, if not indefinitely? And people will often use that 2-year mark as a bit of an indicator. I often wonder, what for kids, you know, just because they're younger and smaller, is it fast-tracked? Is it more? Is it less? But, you know, we often still hear, you know, comments around that 2-year mark as well. So everybody just needs their time to explore, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Brett, what are some of the key considerations or other tips that you would give to expats who are coming home, who are thinking about a similar path of portfolio career? You've been really generous with your insights around, I guess, you know, time and, you know, setting up financially if this is something to consider. But are there any other final tips you'd like to offer?
Yeah, I'd probably say for people, you know, looking to come back, as I mentioned earlier, and I'll say it again later, is get in touch with yourself, Margot, as quickly as possible. That's number one. And people within the network as well. Just try to understand what other people have done and then how to do that coming back. The second thing and related to that is, what do you really want to do? Maybe it's a forced return. It could be like that, or there weren't other options. But, you know, you're coming back to Australia regardless. So what is it that you really want to do with your day and with your career and with your life? If it's you're not quite sure yet, then maybe a portfolio approach is right. And within that, there's companies that help you do that in terms of setting up a portfolio approach. I was lucky enough to be introduced by yourself, Margot, to Julia from Leaders on Demand. And their approach is to have people who have been through pretty high-level roles, and it could be internationally or it could be in Australia, to join their network, if you like. And then when different opportunities come up for clients, the whole idea is to put people into those roles who can hit the ground running. And so I was lucky enough to join them in August last year after the introduction you gave. And that's very helpful because they're not looking for people who are necessarily full-time wanting a career. It's not like that. They're looking for people who can do the job and go in on different deployments, either a short-term, it could be a part-time deployment, or it could be full-time for a period of time as an interim. But there's companies like that are fantastic that can help you achieve that. And there are others out there in the industry. It just depends on what you want. Do you want interim deployment? Do you want portfolio approach? What is it you actually want when it comes down to making that decision, and then speak to the right people to achieve that outcome?
I think it's really important for people to know that they're not alone, that there are others who can complement what it is that you're looking to do and who can actively help. I think you're right, just to get really clear about, is that the path that you want? Now, Brett, you've been incredibly generous with your insights, so thank you. But before I let you go, we do close all of our podcasts with 5 quick questions. So I'd like to put those to you now. Living overseas taught me what about myself?
It taught me that I need to be very adaptable.
The number one skill I use today in my business is?
Connecting with others.
Yeah.
I say connecting, not networking, because networking is one thing, but actually connecting with other people.
The best thing I have discovered since arriving home is?
Australia is such an amazing place. It has changed a lot over time, absolutely, but it's still just an amazing place.
The first thing I'd encourage a new repat to do is?
First thing is to join InSync Network pretty quickly. Do that, but also do, in terms of the networking connections and everything like that, you know, you can do that definitely through the group, but really make strong connections. And going back to that quote from before, you know, life's too short to waste your time on people who don't respect, value and appreciate you. Margot and the team does.
Ah, thanks.
So, and there's a lot of people out there that you can get connected with that do. So make sure you spend your time and focus on those people.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks, Brett. I feel like your PR and corporate affairs background is kicking in earnest with this episode. So I do appreciate that. You gave us a beautiful quote to finish on. So I don't know if you had an extra one that you wanted to contribute, or a song that might remind you of your time overseas.
Yeah, I've got probably too many songs that remind me of overseas, but probably the quote, it came from a book that, you know, it's a very short book, but really short chapters, but really helpful. It's called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff by Richard Carlson. And one of the quotes in that book is, ask yourself the question, am I making the absolute best of this moment? And I think that resonates with everything I've said, but everything coming back. You know, you're gonna spend a lot of time doing a lot of things. So really ask yourself, am I really making the most of that moment and doing what I think is right? You'll learn in some cases, probably no, but you can't get that time back. But, you know, really think about it and invest the time in what's important to you and for your family.
Oh, thanks, Brett. I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat. I think you've been, as I said earlier, very generous with your insights. And I know that we have a lot of listeners who are really considering the portfolio career. So thank you again.
No problems. Thanks, Margot. Take care.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review, share it with your friends and family, and subscribe for future episodes. For more information on our guests, please head to our website, insyncnetworkgroup.com, where you can check out the show notes and also find more information about our career advisory programs and fabulous community.